Good afternoon. I am happy this afternoon to call to order the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, February 9th, 2015. Welcome to our hearing. We have a public hearing today on two bills. The first bill is House Bill 2437. The second is House Bill 2465. If anybody is interested in testifying, you know the procedure. Please come up and sign up, and we're happy to have you participate. On that note, I will turn it over to Mr. Brennan to explain to us House Bill 2437, then we'll open a public hearing on that bill. I'll open the hearing on House Bill 2437.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2437 authorizes the Oregon Business Development Department to enter into agreements for loans, grants, and other assistance, including but not limited to direct purchase of goods or services related to entrepreneurial and industrial development. The measure has an emergency clause, and so would take effect upon passage. As is a public hearing, we have received a statement of no revenue impact, but have yet to receive a fiscal impact statement on this measure. We have no amendment before us.
Thank you, Patrick. Mr. Trummer, thank you for joining us today from the Oregon Business Development Department.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Evo Trummer. I'm Government Affairs Manager for the Oregon Business Development Department. This is an agency bill. Not speaking for our CFO, but the reason you probably don't have a fiscal impact statement there because there is no fiscal impact associated with this. This bill really just clarifies language and statute about activities that we already are conducting, have been conducting for many, many years in the Industry Competitiveness Fund. We primarily use the fund to do industry support and company support and industry association support through primarily grants, occasionally a loan. To build, I'll just name three things, to do export promotion work or work with OMEP, the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, so they can go out and do their work, or also to support the Western Juniper Alliance with their great work in Eastern Oregon. We have been doing this for many years. Our current budget for this fund for the current biennium is roughly $2 million, which we have expended almost all of it with a leverage of 4-1 at this point, some federal monies, but mostly private monies. As I said, through a rule review, a regular rule review, it just came to light that we got to provide absolute clarity in statute that what we are doing is what we already have been doing for a long time, provide loans and grants and personal service contracts. It's a fairly technical bill in the housekeeping fix. With that, I think I'd be happy to take any questions.
I think we're starting off with a whiz-bang. There don't seem to be any questions, Mr. Trummer. All right. Well, with no questions, I will close the hearing on House Bill 2437 and open a hearing on House Bill 2465. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2465 eliminates the requirement that driver licenses, driver permits, and identification cards note changes of address on the card itself. It authorizes the Department of Transportation to establish by rule change of address requirements for driver licenses, driver permits, and identification cards. The measure deletes the requirement that applicants for driving privileges for persons under 18 years of age submit proof of school enrollment, except in cases where the applicant's privileges have been suspended for withdrawal from school. The measure also eliminates the moped-restricted driver license category. It removes the requirement that out-of-state applicants for motorcycle endorsements take the motorcycle knowledge test in Oregon if the applicant already has such an endorsement on a license issued by another state. This measure currently has been issued a statement of no revenue impact. We have not yet received a fiscal impact statement. And I believe the folks who will be testifying will be speaking to an amendment which will be forthcoming at some near future point, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. The first on our list to testify on this bill today is Amy Joyce from the Oregon Department of Transportation. So, Amy, thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. My name is Amy Joyce from the Oregon Department of Transportation, today representing the DMV, and with me is Tom McClellan, the administrator of Oregon's DMV. And we've submitted some testimony that should be with you electronically. But this is really a small bill, House Bill 2465, that will get at some small efficiencies to make a visit to DMV a little more streamlined, reduce wait times a little bit, and conserve some resources. So there are five main parts to the bill, and I'll just walk through those. The first thing the bill will do is eliminate the moped restricted driver license. This is a license available to those 16 years of age or older and allows them to drive a moped, which is basically a bike that's 50 cc's or under. We issue about 10 of these per year. There are less than 100 of them on the books. And the reality is if you have a standard Class C license, you're legal to drive a moped. So for the value of about 10 licenses a year, DMV has to keep an entire program, an entire bureaucracy, if you will, around this license. So test questions, a test course, drive test examiners who are knowledgeable about it, field staff, phone staff, and headquarters staff who know all the elements of this program, and other kind of administrative things like websites. So we believe that the time has come to get rid of this very tiny item and can move resources in another direction. The second item would allow DMV to write rules about the proof necessary to show residence address for driver licenses, permits, and ID cards. So part of the current law uses the word document. That's been interpreted to mean a piece of paper when you come in and have to show proof of address. Part of the problem with that is people come in to the DMV after having changed their address maybe 2, 4, 6 years ago online or through the mail, and they don't come in with any kind of document showing that updated address. So what DMV would like to do is move to a rulemaking to allow more flexibility about what how to prove up a residence address and residence in Oregon. So some ideas around that might be the ability that many of us have with a smartphone. We can show proof of insurance with a smartphone. We can get a utility bill on the smartphone. Those are things you could use today in a documentary form to show proof of address. Maybe you're going to show it electronically. Coming in the future, well on its way, and what DMV would eventually like to do is use some tools that would be available perhaps from the Postal Service or some private entities that are address verification tools. Mm-hmm. So we could perhaps do proof of address using those kinds of tools. So what we're looking for is some flexibility around showing that a person lives where they say they live, that they live in Oregon. And I want to be clear about two things that this bill does not do in the section that I've been asked some questions about. This does not change in any way the law or standards for the proof of identity, that is, the person is who they say they are, and the proof of legal presence in the U.S. It has absolutely nothing to do with that, so I just wanted to make that clear on the record. The third item in the bill deals with proof of school enrollment. So current law provides two ways in which DMV assists the school system in keeping kids in our classrooms. One of them is a precise tool. So if a kid is chronically absent or drops out of school, the school has the ability now under law to notify DMV to suspend the license or the permit, or the ability to apply for it in the future. So if that kid comes into DMV, I want to get a permit, it's on the record. No, you can't. You have to go get back enrolled in school to be able to do this. That stays in the law under this bill. What the bill proposes to do is to get rid of kind of the broader brush that hits all teens 18 and under. And that is that every time a kid comes into the DMV to get a permit or a license, they have to show proof of enrollment, so that kind of affirmative demonstration with a form from their school. As you can imagine, many teens and their parents who are accompanying them show up at DMV without that form. So they wait in line, they get to the front, they try to get their license, and they get turned away for lack of that form. And if it's in the middle of the summer, you can maybe be waiting weeks for school to open back up and get the form. So what the bill proposes to do is to be more efficient and precise, leave that precise tool in place that's directed right at the kid who is having the problems, and also have that carrot that's able for the school to say, you know, this thing exists in the law, don't you need to be staying at school or you won't be able to get a license. But get rid of that that overarching kind of broad brush that exists. The fourth item is for folks moving to Oregon from out of state who are coming in to get a license and they already have a motorcycle endorsement. The bill proposes to get rid of the motorcycle knowledge test that now one has to take. So you move into Oregon from out of state, get an Oregon license. You've got to take that Class C knowledge test, the rules of the road. To get a motorcycle endorsement, you also have to take the knowledge test. But for those folks who already have an endorsement from the other state that they're coming from, they've already taken a test. They've already gone through some training. So having them take another knowledge test that is really rudimentary, how to operate a motorcycle, you're really getting no value for that effort. So we can save about 4,000 knowledge tests a year. Again, small efficiency, but it's something we think we can do and that we need statutory authority to change. There's a fifth item in the bill that talks about the change of address sticker, effectively. So when you change your address with DMV, you can get a new card. But what most people do is we just mail them an address sticker and put it on there. What the bill proposed to do is to give us the opportunity to eliminate that. There are a number of problems with the sticker. We're only one of two states left in the U.S. that still does a sticker. 30-some states don't do anything. You change your address, it just stays as it is on the card. But we've had a lot of questions raised about that, concerns from the business side, where folks are concerned that if that address isn't on there, this is quite new, and perhaps this isn't the right time for that. So we're proposing an amendment to our own bill to remove that section and kind of deal with that and take that out. So those are the small efficiencies we're looking for in this bill. It's not a big, sexy bill, but we get a little bit of value, a little bit of reduced wait time, a little bit of cost savings, a little bit of end of frustration for folks in our office. So that's what the bill does.
Well, thank you, Ms. Joyce. And, of course, efficiency and those little savings that we can find all along the way add up to big savings over time, so we appreciate your efforts in efficiency.
Thank you.
Mr. McClellan, I have you on the docket to speak also.
Only if there's questions, Madam Chair.
I'll look to the panel. Yes, sir. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when you say, Amy, the last point you made, you're taking it out, but you mean you're leaving it in. Is that what you mean?
Chair McEwen, Representative Benz, I believe I know exactly what you mean. And, yes, in fact, it is staying in the law and being removed from the bill.
Fine.
It's sticking around.
It's sticking.
We'll send you your address sticker next week.
Thank you. I could use one.
Representative Lane. Okay, so that took one of my questions. But you, in other words, you are going to still try to keep the most updated address on the license.
Chair McEwen, Representative McLean, right. With the amendment that we're proposing, if you change your address, we're going to mail you that sticker. You're going to put it on your license, and there it will be.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the moped and the motorcycles. I think both of those sound like efficiencies and sound like easier ways to do business. But I do think I want to at least put out there that, as I told you in my office, that there are two issues there that I still think that when you have a system that has only a stick and not a carrot, you take some people out of the equation. And parents have been able to say, you have to be in school or you can't get your license. And now you've got a stick, and the school can say, hey, this kid's suspended, so take his license away. But you don't offer that carrot with this, you know, with this amendment. And also, we have some, you know, some graduation rate issues, and we have some enrollment issues, and we have some dropout issues. And some of our heavy dropouts across the state have been happening at the ninth grade, beginning of the sophomore year. And one other way that parents had to say was, you know, stay in school. I know you want to do well so you can have lower insurance and you can get that license. So I just think it's worthwhile thinking about that if we're going to do this, you know, do it in a way that, is this really what we want to do? And we want to take away part of an incentive just for efficiency. And so I'm just putting that out there. You already answered my question about it, so I understand your perspective. And then the second one is, basically dealing with the idea that, as you point out, you know, this license, you know, other than a passport, I don't know of anything other than a birth certificate and a passport. This is the documented, issued, you know, type of proof of who you are. And you've indicated that there won't be any eroding of that. And I think that keeping the change of address does help my concern there. And I appreciate the amendment that's coming, and I think I can support that with the amendment that's coming. But it says that we will continue having the most updated license in our system and on our proof of document or proof of government-issued identification as possible.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
Yes. Yes. Representative Hack.
Thank you. Just have a couple questions, and we spoke in my office too at length and had lots of questions, and you did a great job answering, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. Are the schools supposed to notify DMV when a student drops out? Is that their responsibility, or are they required to do that?
Chair McEwen and Representative Hack, right, that's the current law, is that if there, and there's a series of statutes, one of them has to do with absenteeism, and one of them is with dropping out, but right, so the school can, and schools do, notify DMV to either suspend the license or suspend even their ability to apply, yes.
And you're in this, that'll no longer be in effect, or that will still be, but the parent will have the opportunity to sign off instead of the school. Can you clarify that a little bit?
Chair McEwen and Representative Hack, the provision will stay in place. The schools still have that ability to notify DMV. And the parent, unless there is a provision for instance, homeschooled folks, then the parent's the one doing the signing off. But a parent can't override the school. In this instance, it is up to the school who says, no, this child dropped out of school. They're suspended until they get right with the school. That stays in the law. It's the front end piece where the 90% of kids or however many of them are who are in school who've got to get that form, take it down to DMV. So that's the piece, that front end.
And I have seen the frustration. You and I talked about that working in a school district office. It is very frustrating to get that form. And if it's schools are closed and it's after, 4 o'clock and the kids go get it, it is frustrating. So I get that. How often do school districts actually notify DMV is my question. How, if they are required to do that, are they? Do you get a lot of those? I mean, I agree with Representative McLean, that we do have a problem with our absenteeism rates. And so how are you hearing from school districts often?
Chair McEwen and Representative Hack, we ran those numbers after some of the conversations that we had with members. There are several hundred a year that are notified where the school notifies DMV to do a suspension, so several hundred a year. I think as part of this, if this piece of the bill goes through, I think there's an education piece that needs to go along with it. And what, DMV can inform the school is, good news, you don't have to do it up on the front end, but you have this tool existing in the law that you may not know about. Please send us that notice, and we take care of it on our end to get that kid suspended. So there's an education piece, I think, definitely there if the policy decision is to go in this direction.
One other question in regards to the address. Am I to understand correctly that the rules will be left up to the department to decide what will be required? So we're going to leave it up to DMV to decide how folks can prove where they're living and their address?
Chair McEwen and Representative Hack, yes, that's accurate. It's, one might say, an administrative function to figure that out. that said, if there's concern about it being too wide open, I've given a description here of a couple of things that DMV is looking at. We are not looking to go to self-certification. I think that's a phrase I used in some of my meetings with you folks, and I think that's an overstatement of where DMV would intend to go. But yes, it's the rule writing process, which is a very open and public process. But if there's concern about the language, about how the bill is drafted, we'd be very happy to talk with folks about if there's interest in constraints on that of some sort. But yes, that's how the bill
is. I think there just is some concern just from some constituents I've talked to, just because it's tied to voter registration and several other things, and so it might not be a bad idea to come up with some solid ideas of how you're going to do that. And I don't know if anybody else has had that discussion or not.
Representative McLean.
Well, to that very point, because I agree with you that there have been some comments that were made about that specific issue. But one other way to do it besides rulemaking is to have a better definition of documentation. And you gave us some of those smartphones, okay? So you've got some technical things you're looking at in the future. And to be honest with you, I'd rather see an amendment that basically defined documentation using smartphone and any other tool you think's out there so that we would have some clarity about what document or what the process is. And also it was equity. There are some people that it's, you know, depending on the technical, whatever it is, some people might have a smartphone, some people might not, you know, so it would get the debate out there in front with a definitional, debate or public display here in the committee of what you mean by documentation. And we could talk about the equity issues and we could talk about the clarity issues. But I would prefer a definition versus a rulemaking. And this is small. It's supposed to be small and efficient. So that'll take away the long, tedious rulemaking process.
I think, Ms. Joyce, there's a lot of interest in this particular piece of this bill, and I think it's something that we'll look forward to you coming back to us and maybe more clearly defining what that may look like in the future, whether it's rulemaking or otherwise.
Very good.
Thank you. Well, I had a couple of questions if everyone else is exhausted there. Did you have a question, Representative Davis?
It's covered well.
I want to go back to the school truancy issue. As a former school board member for many, many, many years, this was a topic that we visited on more than one occasion. And we actually looked at the possibility of tying the parent's license to the truancy of the child, which was, we didn't follow through, but it certainly was a conversation at trying to get those kids in those buildings, in those seats, and continuing to learn. But how well does the DMV educate our educators that this is there? I'm looking particularly at COSA or, you know, associations where this may be presented in a way that it could be globally represented, that this is a tool that they have. Positions change, new principals come in, superintendents change, teachers change. I mean, this is an issue that I'm just wondering, how do you broadcast this information to the schools?
Chair McEwen, I believe this is something we could do a lot better job at. It's not an audience that we target for this type of information. The more we've talked about this, I think it actually is something on a regular basis we need to be getting it out through, like you said, the school boards association and the school districts more directly. Mm-hmm. It is a tool at their disposal. I'm sure as they have turnover, as staff move from district to district, you know, that kind of lose that knowledge, it's a bit of a hammer, I guess, that is available to them. So I think there's more that we could do, even if this doesn't go through the way we propose it. It is at their disposal, and we should be doing more to make it available.
And the issue of truancy is reached such a fever pitch in this state that is something that is a tremendous of tremendous interest and concern, I think, to all of us. And I think there may be an opportunity there through OSBA or the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, or through OEA, so teachers are aware that this is something that they're the ones that are, you know, where the rubber meets the road, knowing those kids are in their seats, through the registrars. Registrars meet across the state. We have people coming in and out of the state all the time that are in administrative positions and teaching positions, so just something that it might be helpful to be aware of. On the motorcycle endorsement, is there a time frame in which those expire in Oregon? How long does a motorcycle endorsement last?
Chair McEwen, a motorcycle endorsement in Oregon lasts as long as
forever.
You keep
forever.
Paying the fee at renewal.
So there's no issue of people coming in who've been endorsed for a long period of time, that there isn't any retraining that they may need if they kind of hit that window where they could get a lengthy endorsement. So you've answered that question. I'll take that one off my list. I had one other question. So licensure now issued, I believe, 8 years is the maximum. And I know there's been conversation, and part of the reason that this came to the forefront about the sticker and the address change issue is those stickers don't last. Right. Is that we have technology. Is there any way to make those stickers more durable? If we're going to pull that, and this is an issue that we're going to continue to deal with, is there a way in your shops to make those more durable?
Well, Chair McEwen, we can explore other options that are out there. We haven't recently because we were proposing to do away with that. But If the direction is to keep them, continue to issue them, we can look to see what else is out there as far as other suppliers. And
I mean, in my experience as a consumer, I've had to use that sticker. Mm-hmm. And once you pull it in out of your wallet a few times, it's gone. It's just a paper sticker like you'd use as a mailing label. So I'm wondering if there's some technology that may make that more helpful so that they're more durable and last longer. Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
Going back then to the student verification thing, I think if we had a system where we knew that there was consistent report by the schools, then it would be somewhat redundant to need that paper when they want to go and get their license. But I think that's probably the sticking point, is we're not sure how well the schools report. So if we knew that the schools were reporting at a very high level, then it makes the other somewhat redundant. So, I mean, several hundred, that's not a small figure, but if you could explore that more, it might help with that.
Certainly. Follow up.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the reporting piece, though, is that you're enrolled, correct? Isn't the reporting piece when you're 15 to get your permit? It's an enrollment piece. The other piece is if you're not attending, and then you're suspended. So there are two different pieces to that. So if a student goes in to get their permit or their license, they have to show that they're enrolled in school. And that's where typically a parent doesn't realize that, especially if it's their first time that they go in, and then they go down to DMV and they may end up going clear to another city to take their child in for their driver's test. They don't realize they need that. They have to cancel the test, and then they go all the way back, right, to have to go back to their school district or their high school or wherever to get this little piece of paper, and then they have to go reschedule the test that could take them a month or two to get back into. So it's two different forms. Am I correct? You guys know how that works, but that's how I understand it to be.
Yeah. Chair McEwen and Representative Hack, you described it much more eloquently than I about the kind of level of inefficiency that can occur with these things. So correct, you come in with a specific form that from the school district, right, just saying, yes, I'm enrolled. The proactive piece from the district can be about chronic absenteeism or a dropout. So it's a slightly different question.
And a follow-up with another question. I'm making an assumption that if a student goes from district to district, if reporting issues are inherent in the system, I mean, and I know that the state is trying very hard to make sure that when a student drops out of one district, they may pop up in another one and they don't know where they've gone, or they may go to another state. That happens also, of course. It would be interesting to know, in your system, can you follow the student from district to district? They may have been reported as a dropout here, but if they pop up over here, will that connect up in your system?
Chair McEwen, I believe we keep that on the record. So even if they move and change schools, and now they're attending school, when they come in to get the driver's license, our employee will see that there's something on the record showing that their right to apply has been suspended, ask them to take care of that with the school district. So we'd end up, I believe, contact the original school who had that placed on the record and get that removed. We can verify that step.
And really, that's a school district responsibility, but you could be that conduit. A lot of times students just leave, and they don't report that they're leaving, and they don't actually drop out. They show up someplace else.
Yes.
So that's interesting. You've taken on a new role of notifying a school district that a student has enrolled someplace else.
The suspension is for the individual, for the student. It's not school-specific. I believe it is.
It's statewide, no matter where they are. Right. Thank you for the clarification.
And if I may, Chair McEwen, I mean, this is a sort of standard DMV suspension. It's not as if the student isn't notified. So a mailing does go out saying you're going to be suspended in 30 days. I mean, this is a standard suspension one would get for any number of different reasons. So there's a notification. So presumably, if the student's re-enrolled at the school across town or across the state, they can go, oh, geez, here's my... I re-enrolled someplace else. Don't suspend me. So there's a mechanism there. It's not done in a vacuum.
Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions or clarifications needed for this bill?
No.
Great. Thank you, the two of you, for joining us. We have one other witness that has signed up to testify on House Bill 2465. I'd like to call up Rosemary Scott. Good afternoon, Ms. Scott. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. I don't know if I'm allowed just to ask a question. I'd just like clarification because there's another bill pending where the Secretary of State, wants to enroll voters by, or register voters by the DMV records. And I'm wondering how the change of address would affect that. If it's a sticker on there, is the notification going to be on the DMV records and be transferred to the Secretary?
Ms. Scott, I do not have the expertise to answer that question. There, you're asking about a bill that I am not familiar with yet. I know it's coming. I haven't seen the text of it. I may turn to Ms. Joyce or Mr. McClellan. Do you have an answer for Ms. Scott? And if not, we'll hope we can find one for you at some point.
Sorry about that. It's okay. Chair McHugh, members of the committee, Tom McClellan, DMV administrator. The requirement to notify DMV of a change of address does not change with this bill. If you move, you must still notify us and provide documentation. We update the record. So any change in your address, the document of record is whatever you provide as your most recent address. Under the bill she's referencing, we would still send that address for voting purposes to the elections folks.
So to clarify, you will use the most current address that you have on record, which would be the one on the sticker, whether the sticker is still on the back of your license or not. In the record that you have, it is the most current address.
Yes. Representative McHugh, and there may even be a time lapse between the latest sticker being mailed to you, but we'll have the most accurate current address in our computer system.
Okay.
We don't take a copy of the card that we send to Secretary of State's office. It's what's on in our record for that individual,
which is
the most current that we've been notified by that person of what their address is.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Scott?
Thank you.
All right, you're very welcome.
That was nice. Wow.
Any other questions?
Who says we don't solve?
We're solving problems.
All right, then I'm going to close. I will close the hearing on House Bill 2465 for the good of the order. Look at this. I want some credit here. We're done.
Later.
You planned this.
Actually, I did not. I thought this might take a little longer, so I will take that as poor timing on my part. But enjoy your afternoon, committee, and use your time well, and we will reconvene at 3 o'clock on Wednesday.